This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 28th of March 2014. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 28th of March 2014. I shouldn't read my script that strictly. Which this week have been edited by Linda Vincent and Margaret Boyden. Your readers today are Shirley Parnell.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
Oh, I got that right. And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. Now, the main headlines this week: developers set to fight Newtown refusal. Silver Hill will get bus area, says boss. And Danger Junction in line for safety works. So, Shirley, may we now have the story behind the first headline, please?
Developer set to fight Newtown refusal. A 24-year fight to stop a new town being built on the edge of Winchester has taken an 11th-hour twist, just as campaigners were seemingly celebrating victory. Zurich Assurance Limited is to challenge a High Court judgment which looked to have finally ended its drive to build the new town near Mitchell-Dever. The company intends to contest the ruling at the Court of Appeal. Last week, the High Court threw out Zurich's original challenge to Winchester's district local plan, which does not include its proposed development of 12,500 new homes on its land near Mitchell-Dever. The Honourable Mr Justice Sales dismissed all three strands of legal argument presented to him at a hearing in February. Nearby residents hoped this would finally bring Zurich's battle to a close, but a spokesman for Zurich Assurance Limited, formerly Eagle Star Estates, said the company was disappointed that the High Court rejected the terms of its legal challenge, ruling in favour of Winchester City Council's adopted joint core strategy. Zurich Assurance Limited recognises the potential for housing development at Mitchell-Dever Station, located to the north of Winchester, and we intend to appeal against the High Court's decision. In our view, there are a number of errors in the housing plan adopted by Winchester City Council in the joint core strategy. Amongst the concerns are that the plan will provide an inadequate number of new local homes in the period to 2031. We appreciate the sensitivity of this matter, and we have no immediate plans to take forward any development proposal at Mitchell-Dever Station. However, it is important that we keep all options open. That is what our appeal against the High Court ruling will allow us to do. If this latest appeal proves successful, it will threaten to derail the entire planning strategy for the area, giving Zurich and others the chance to promote their controversial developments. The Diva Society, which comprises residents in and around Mitchell-Dever, has campaigned against the new town since 1990. Chairman Douglas Patterson said, "Zurich are really pushing their luck. The ruling last week was pretty categorical. I think the judge's use of the word unmeritorious is a pretty severe put-down. It means you're wasting my time." As I understand it, if the appeal is unmeritorious, then Zurich will be liable for very substantial costs. But they clearly have a sniff of a huge windfall with the development, so think it's worth it. I have the greatest admiration for the City Council and planners who have made a hugely considered and democratic local plan. We have to hope that the processes higher up will continue to uphold it. Winchester MP Steve Brine said, "This challenge shows a thorough discourtesy to us all, and I thought Mr Justice Sales put it very well when he described Zurich's primary point of contention as contrived and unmeritorious.
Silverhill will get bus area, says Boss. People in Winchester have been given the chance to have their say before the Silverhill scheme gets the final rubber stamp to be built, perhaps as soon as October. Property developer Henderson is hosting a public exhibition at the Guild Hall to discuss the current designs with members of the public. This £130 million project will see new shops, cafes and restaurants built, as well as nearly 200 apartments, bringing hundreds of new jobs. But there has been controversy over the lack of a replacement bus station. Martin Perry, director of retail property development at Henderson, said, "The trend for cities seems to suggest a move away from bus stations, and in this particular case, there was more than one operator in a fairly run-down and untidy station, so we weren't surprised when they didn't want one. However, it gave us a few opportunities to look at the potential to expand the scheme and incorporate Friarsgate much better. However, a new area for buses has been designed as more linear," Mr. Perry says, "in an effort to create a landscaped boulevard, and it is a matter of the station's shape, not services, that will be reconfigured. From a resident's point of view, you'll still be getting the same bus," he said. "The number 22 will still leave from its own stop. Now it just means that when you wait for a bus, you have proper seats at the stop, and you'll still be able to buy your ticket from a person at the ticket office. There'll be a reduction in the number of houses in the city centre, but Mr. Perry said this was necessary to make the site more practical. It had 297 units in it, but only 100 car parking spaces. It just wasn't going to work," he said. "We knew that all that would do was put pressure on the surrounding streets. There'll be 180 homes in total, made up of a range of one to three bed apartments, each with one car parking space, as well as outdoor space in the form of a balcony or small garden." Mr. Perry said it was about preventing people from leaving Winchester to go to Eastleigh or Southampton for shops that Winchester currently doesn't have. "The existing scheme doesn't work. The whole thing is about creating little pockets in and around the centre of the town. It's a mix of retail and restaurants between two different squares, which tries to emanate the feel of Winchester, and it's deliberately designed as a loop, which used to be Cross Keys Passage, in an effort to redirect pedestrian traffic. There is something about cathedral cities that draws people in. People come here because they don't want to sit at home shopping on the net. We think there's a huge potential for fashion retail, where people want to try them on and move around if you have them in a relatively compact environment. This will attract people who want to go into the older environment as well as the new one. We're knocking down something that's not very Winchester for something that is." The Guildhall exhibition is open on Saturday between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m.
And this item is headed Danger Junction in line for safety works. There may be a solution in sight for an accident black spot at a busy Kingsworthy Junction. The A33 Cart and Horses Junction with London Road has seen four reported accidents between August and the end of last year. One was deemed as serious. Now, new plans, which have been drawn up by resident and civil engineer Dan Conroy, could see sight lines improved for those crossing the A33 out of London Road and the B3047, as well as improvements to pedestrian crossings and a speed limit change. Plans for a roundabout were last year rejected due to the estimated £3 million cost. The latest proposals are now being reviewed by Hampshire County Council, and MP Steve Brine, who has long campaigned for safety changes at the junction, has welcomed the idea. He said, "If I'm honest, I think my constituents want a significant road layout change here, but we have to be reasonable and sensible and work within what is technically possible and, of course, affordable. Mr. Conroy has always understood that, which has been helpful. I've really pushed for changes here since becoming the MP, and Councillor Sean Woodward especially has been really responsive. I think we're getting somewhere, but we need now to see the precise plans and proposed timetable from the County Council." Councillor Woodward, Executive Member for Economy, Transport and Environment, said the Council is proposing three safety improvements at the junction, namely a footway layout, signing and lining measures, and a potential speed limit change. He said, Part of this work will include studies to observe the traffic situation at the junction during peak periods and will take into account accidents that have occurred over the last 5 years. Concerns about safety at the junction were expressed in June 2013. At that time, we were reviewing the accident record at the junction and were considering works at this site for the provisional 2014-15 Casualty Reduction Programme. What we are now proposing is to bring all the options together, the signing and lining safety measures, the proposed footway layout, and the potential speed limit change later this year. Councillor Ian Gordon, Chairman of Planning and Highways at Kingsworthy Parish Council, said the junction is subject to more accidents than are accounted for, but was pleased with the proposed changes. The plan, once reviewed by the County Council, will be put out for consultation with the parish and city councils.
Well, thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements and Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, historical items, chronicle comment and first person, and indeed there's some items from Belgarum. And that will be followed by the announcements and what's on. So we start with the death announcements for this week. Atkinson, Margaret Gwendolyn Atkinson, who died peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 98. Fry, Dorry Fry, died at Southampton Hospital after a fall, aged 84. Holdsworth, Margaret Rose Holdsworth, who died on the 19th of May at Maypole Nursing Home, aged 87. McCabe, John McCabe, who died in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 73. Newell, K. Newell, died on the 22nd of March, aged 81. Pearson, Horace Arthur Pearson, died on the 27th of February, aged 92. And Pilly, Grace Evelyn Pilly, died on the 18th of March, aged 94. And now we're going to move on to Christian comment, read by Shirley.
Right. This is written by Mary Gray, and it's headed Annunciation and the Go-Between God. On Tuesday, March 25th, the Christian Church celebrated the Feast of the Annunciation, also known as Lady Day. Then we remembered the gospel story, so beloved of Christian art, where the angel Gabriel announced to Mary of Nazareth that she was to be the mother of a special child, conceived by the Holy Spirit, who would be the Son of God. Mary said, "Be it done unto me according to your word," was the famous response. But why has this special resonance with Winchester? In 1972, the then bishop, the Right Reverend John Taylor, wrote a book called The Go-Between God, still influential more than 40 years later. In an inspirational way, Bishop Taylor developed a theology of the Holy Spirit as the energy or force field drawing people together in relation. He used annunciation to express this relational encounter, inspired by the New Testament annunciation story. He invoked the Jewish thinker Martin Buber as inspiration for the I and thou relation, a relation of depth and mutuality. Buber's insistence on the beginning was the relation recalled us to the moment of God's creation of the world, brought into being by creative love and desire for relationship with humanity. The bishop thought that our lives lived in the energy of and creativity of the Spirit could be experienced as annunciations, encounters of mutuality leading to compassion and consideration for each other. Hence the idea of the Spirit as go-between. These have continued to inspire and sustain. They are rooted in the idea of God as our passion for justice. Justice is at the heart of faith because it is fueled by God's very self, not an optional add-on. Justice is the very heartbeat of God, wrote Philip Newell of the Iona community. In the beginning was God. In the beginning was relation, because God is the power and energy of our relating, our yearning for justice and right relation. Whether we speak about God's creation of the universe, the incarnation of Jesus to heal the broken connections, or the wind and flame of the Spirit at Pentecost, we are speaking of God's passion for justice, for healed relationships among all earth creatures and life forms. If the divine purpose for creation is the remaking of broken connections, justice and peace are the way to achieve this. Our passion for justice confronts the fact that though we yearn for mutuality and connectedness, broken relations surround us. We need more annunciations, more spirit-filled encounters, like what occurred so long ago between Mary and the angel in Nazareth.
Thank you, Shirley. That concludes question comment. And now we're going to move on to letters to the editor. And if you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or, of course, you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We're going to start with the letters. I think the first three all relate to the decision around the bus station. So, Noel, can you start us off with the first letter, please?
Yes, the first one is Alistair Marsden, who asks the question, Turkey's voting for Christmas? Sir, it seems strange and rather depressing that Stagecoach should be one of the parties mutually agreeing to more retail space rather than a bus station. Surely this is Turkey's voting for Christmas. What next? The police preferring to close the police station to accommodate a new leisure centre? Or Southwest Trains supporting a train station closure because the temptation of a new ice rink was simply hard to resist? George Hollingbury, citing the absence of bus stations in London as a justification for the decision, misses the rather obvious point that Winchester and London are just a little bit different. As an aside, a quick glance at Wikipedia would also reveal that there are 40 bus stations in London. Given Winchester's size and its relationship to the surrounding villages, buses are the only option for public transport around both the city and the district. A hub bus station is vital to the long-term future of public transport for the city. It's time Stagecoach actively marketed buses in Winchester, starting perhaps with the neglected evening service. Some support from our local politicians would not go amiss either. Alistair Marsden, Stanmore Lane, Winchester.
And Karen Barrett writes, Community comes before Stagecoach. Sir, so Winchester may not get a new bus station when Silver Hill is developed because, in the words of Stagecoach boss Andrew Dyer, more retail space suited Stagecoach and suited the developer. Chronicle, March the 20th. Well, it may suit them, but it doesn't suit me or many other bus users I've spoken to. Neither does it suit Stagecoach bus drivers who need staff facilities when they change crews. I've spoken to them too. Age UK is not impressed either. In your report, its chairman, Philip Vos, made very good points about the impact on the elderly. Initially, it was this group I was most concerned about, which was why I raised the issue at the last Winchester Town Forum meeting. Stagecoach may be a private company, but it provides a public service, and it has a responsibility to all its customers and staff alike. Buses are used by all sections of the community, who would benefit from the provision of decent toilets, covered waiting areas, information office, etc. If Winchester City Council is serious about reducing the number of cars coming into the city centre, public transport must be made as attractive as possible. Waiting for bus connections in some windswept parking area is not good enough for a city like Winchester. In any case, why can't some small retail units be part of a bus station? It could also provide an advertising hub for our specialist shops and other attractions. Stagecoach and Henderson need to show some imagination, and the City Council needs to remember that it is the planning authority and must do what suits the community best – We vote for them, and we pay their salaries, not Stagecoach. And that was Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Winchester.
And this one on the same subject, from John Hicks, and it's headed, "Our Polluted City Needs Bus Station." So George Hollingberry, MP, does not feel that the lack of a bus station would necessarily trouble his constituents. This may be lucky for the folk of West Meon, but not Winchester, with its winding streets and huge car parks, with air pollution that tops the poll of least green 60 UK cities, which has also registered 25% above maximum permitted nitrogen dioxide levels suggested by EU and UK legislation of 2012. He cites London as a good example of a city without a bus station. What could Winchester, population 114,300, have in common with London's 8.74 million? In this small city, a modern, attractive bus station will cut air pollution and encourage us to use public transport, whereas the plan to cram elderly people, young mothers with pushchairs, and large groups of schoolchildren around roadside bus stops is just heartless. Something doesn't smell right. How can there be general approval for the bus station site to be given over to even more shops and MMX? Who are they, acting as a consultant? There are vacant spaces in Walcott Place, the ghastly Books Centre, and the High Street. And why is George Hollingberry involved anyway? Does he live in Winchester? Does he travel by bus? John Hicks, Hatherley Road, Winchester.
And Mary Edwards is changing the subject. Solved mystery of missing paintings. Sir, read the letter from Valerie Stutchbury, published on March the 20th. Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust was formed in January 2012, bringing together the hospitals in Andover, Basingstoke and Winchester. Having made inquiries into the whereabouts of the paintings Mrs. Stutchbury refers to, I am told that they were removed from the RHCH boardroom some years ago, while the room was redecorated, were put into storage, and that is where they have remained. I thank Mrs. Stutchbury for bringing them to our attention. Now would indeed be a fitting time to put some art back on display. As readers may be aware, we are remodelling the courtyard area facing Romsey Road to improve drop-off and disabled parking and make it easier to access the site, and we look forward to its completion in May. Mary Edwards, Chief Executive, Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust.
And AP Lodge writes, "Council returns to its Philistine ways." Sir, I suppose I hope the City Council had seen the error of its old Philistine ways and today respected the value of Winchester's unique heritage. After all, back in the 1960s, they had wanted to demolish nasty old Cannon Street for some nice modern development, probably brutalist in design, since the council officers seemed to like that. Then there was that plan to put a motorway on stilts across Winnell Moors Nature Reserve. But they lost those battles, and we're all grateful for it. Now, in 2014, show them a bit of Roman wall, nearly 2,000 years old and irreplaceable, and what do they want to do? Use it as builder's rubble, of course. Obvious, really, when the alternative would be to add something unique to Winchester's heritage trail. Can't somebody stop this vandalism? And what's to become of King Alfred's bones? Given the council's record of insensitivity to heritage, I fear at this very minute someone may be planning to turn the old king into fertiliser. And that was AP Lodge, Takedown Meads, Winchester.
And this one from Michael Coker Davis is headed, "City's Arrogance and Ineptitude." Sir, late last night, or rather the early hours of this morning, March 24th, the residents of Upper Brook Street, Winchester, received their latest gift from the vodka bar. Drunken youths, shouting and swearing and waking the street, having yet again consumed endless cheap alcohol. This time, a large, heavy sandbag was thrown onto the roof of a resident's car. The dent caused will likely cost so much to repair as to be impracticable under an insurance claim. This reflects an increasing trend of public order issues in the area since this establishment has opened. Against local opposition, the vodka bar was opened, and ever since the council has wrung its hands, or more usually sat on them, regarding the increasing problems emanating as a result of their decision. Increasingly, Winchester City Council no longer represents the residents of the city. This attitude of indifference, arrogance, and ineptitude spans every area and the decisions the council takes. We demand change. Sort these matters out, or we, yes, the people that pay your salary, want new leadership. Put residents first, instead of contractors, developers, or self-interest. Time to act, gentlemen, or time to leave. Michael Coker Davis, Upper Brook Street, Winchester.
Thank you. Now we're going to step back in time with historical. And Noel, we're going back 200 years, I think.
Yes, 200 years ago, March the 28th, 1814. Two extracts. The first is headed Extraordinary Shots Recorded. On the 4th inst, two of the most extraordinary shots ever recorded were made in the park of Stainsborough Castle by Isaac Naylor, the gamekeeper, at a distance of 80 yards. Disputing about a gun 23 inches long, a person held his hat upon his head with the open part facing him. The keeper immediately shot at arm's length, and the ball went through the middle of the crown. The person who held the hat, not expecting the keeper shooting, was extremely affrighted for some minutes, but said he would stand in the same position again. The keeper immediately shot within 1 inch of the first shot. Good grief. And the second item. A London paper says that it is confidently stated that a treaty of alliance had been entered into between Austria, Prussia, Russia and England for 20 years, by which the high contracting powers bind themselves in the event of a treaty of peace with France to preserve the balance of power in Europe and to protect each other in their territorial possessions, which at such peace may be under the dominion of each power. And for the purpose of guaranteeing the same, the high contracting parties on the continent bind themselves, when called upon, to have ready to take the field 150,000 men each, England to assist with 5 millions of money.
And two items from 100 years ago, March the 28th, 1914. Firstly, overcome by gas fumes. Yesterday afternoon, about 3:45, an accident of an unusual nature happened in the High Street. It seems that two workmen, William Franklin and John Millard, were engaged in tapping the gas main outside Mr. F.R. Cooper's shop and were drilling a hole in order to carry a service pipe to the public lamp close by. The drill appears to have pierced the pipe sooner than the men expected, and it became fixed fast in the main. While the men were doing their best to remove it, the escaping gas got into their lungs and they were overcome by the fumes. And secondly, the Society for the Preservation of Ancient Buildings and Memorials must once again enter on and do good work in preserving the Bar Gate in Southampton, which is likely to be pulled down and rebuilt elsewhere. The cause or excuse, the tram and other traffic through the archway. The famous old seaport has, amidst all its varied fortunes, been fortunate in having authorities who valued the ancient defences and preserved them. We hope the Watch Committee and Corporation will hesitate to pull down and rebuild elsewhere, destroying the interest of the structure entirely.
And from 50 years ago, March the 28th, 1964, changing the face of Hampshire. Two items. Last week's government white paper and accompanying study of South East England are documents that will be in the forefront of the people of Hampshire, and its local government in particular, for at least the remainder of this century. Their effects will be far-reaching, and whatever the final solution may be, The absorption of 150,000 new population by 1981 is to change the face of Hampshire on a scale comparable only with the impact of the Industrial Revolution on the Midlands and North. And the second item, excavations in Winchester this year will be on a far larger scale than before and will cover a much wider area, Mr. Martin Biddle told a meeting in Winchester on Saturday. Mr. Biddle, who has been in charge of the works, said that at the cathedral site they hoped to locate the remains of the Old Minster, which was existing in the 7th century. They will also be continuing to excavate the area of the Brooks in the hope of discovering 10th and 11th century houses, and on the Assize Court site, where they expected to find Roman remains.
And now the last one, 25 years ago, March 31st, 1989. Headed, Poisoned Bait, Risk to Animals. Birds of prey and even pet dogs and cats are being illegally poisoned in Hampshire, warned the Royal Society for Protection of Birds. The Society says that poisoned bait being put down by gamekeepers and landowners is placing people and animals at risk. The bait, often dead rabbits, pigeons, or eggs laced with poison, is left out in the countryside to kill birds or wild animals that threaten the safety of game birds. A report prepared by the RSPB calls for landowners to be made more accountable for what happens on their land. And the second part of this, the battle to save the planet can be won in our own backyards, Friends of the Earth director Jonathan Porritt said in Winchester last week. Mr. Porritt, one of the country's leading ecological campaigners, delivered a lecture at the Guildhall for the Landscape Institute, raising funds for environmental campaigns in the area. He highlighted massive global concerns, such as the depleting ozone layer, deforestation in South America, and the greenhouse effect causing the worldwide warming. The probable doubling of the world's 5 billion population over the next 75 years posed another enormous potential problem.
Thank you. Now we move back to the present and editorial comment, I think, Noel.
Yes, the headline is Teachers Run Risk of Testing Goodwill. Thousands of children across Hampshire were set to miss school on Wednesday as teachers walked out in a row over pay and conditions. Teaching staff say they were left with no choice but to take industrial action in the face of increasing workload, changes to pay, and increases in pension contributions. The strike comes as union leaders warned schools could be left with a shortage of qualified teachers if conditions did not improve, and experienced staff continue to quit the job. Hampshire education chiefs agree there is an emerging problem with the recruitment and retention of qualified teachers. Already the county is seeing fewer applications for advertised teaching jobs, while also recording more teachers leaving before retirement age. Clearly, there is a growing crisis in the profession, and up to now at least, teachers have broadly had the support of the public. The danger is that that support may wane if parents' lives and arrangements are further disrupted by school closures. Many of them too, and not in the public sector, have already endured hardship during the recession, and their understanding may be tested.
And first person this week is George Hayter, writing that length does matter a little at Southampton Airport. A holiday flight was due to take off early one morning some years ago, but it was delayed by fog. By the time the thick mist at Southampton Airport had lifted, the sun was high in the sky and it had become a hot day. Unfortunately, high temperatures make it harder for jet engines to produce thrust. In the cockpit, the pilots checked their acceleration calculations and realised that the plane was not going to get off the ground. The little runway at Southampton was simply too short for the plane to get up to flying speed. The plane was operated by much-loved Palm Air, who decided the only option was for some passengers to get off to make the plane lighter. The crew asked for volunteers. The disembarking passengers were taken by coach to rival Bournemouth Airport, which has a normal length runway. The previously stranded plane was finally able to leave Southampton Airport because of the reduction in its load, but it had to land at Bournemouth to pick up the passengers from the coach before taking off for its Mediterranean destination. Now, years after that debacle, the airport has announced it wants to extend its 5,650-foot runway by 450 feet. The reason the runway is so short is that it is squeezed into a tight site, hemmed in by railway tracks to the north and the M27 to the south. How it has now found room to stretch the runway is not clear to me, despite repeated inquiries to the airport. At the moment, flights can't reach much further than the Alps, but the airport has said the extension will make possible a big increase in destinations and flights, with Romania, Greece and Scandinavia all coming within range. That sounds great. Flights could be cheaper too, as real low-price airlines have so far avoided Southampton, the current runway length making it uneconomic for their 737-sized aircraft. I asked Ryanair if they might be attracted by the longer runway, and they told me they were always looking for suitable new places to fly from. And more flights should boost the Hampshire economy, with more jobs. But councillors will have to approve the extension, and many will fret over global warming and aircraft noise suffered by their constituents. And a bigger airport could bring more traffic and rush hour congestion, particularly on the M27 and M3. Once a big airport is established, it will be hard to scale down. Southampton Airport's Spanish owners know its catchment area will expand if Boris Johnson realises his ambition of closing Heathrow in favour of a new estuary airport. With no Heathrow, flying from an enlarged Southampton airport would become more attractive for everyone living west of London. Adding those few hundred feet could bring big changes at and around our little airport.
And now some items are from Belgarum, an alternative look at the news. Three items. Phil's mum Millie stood no nonsense in classroom. An article in last week's Chronicle has jogged the memory of a local historian. Phil Yates of Tower Street has a family connection to All Saints C of E Primary School featured in the Learning for Life supplement and reminded him of his mother who used to teach there. He said, "My mother taught at that school between 1910 and 1921 when she married my father at St Peter's Chesil, now the Chesil Theatre. She was also a Sunday school teacher there." Phil's mother, Millicent Rummy, known as Millie, was born and brought up at Chesil Terrace and is pictured in a 1983 booklet celebrating the centenary of the school's opening. Old Highcliffe Remembered also pictures the first headmaster, Mr. Whitfield, and when Phil attended the celebrations in 1983, he spoke to some residents taught by his mother. He said, "I asked what she would like was she like as a teacher, and the reply came, 'Thorough but very strict.' I can vouch that she was strict," he said. "She died in 1965, aged 80, and my father died in 1947, aged 67, while I was working down the pits in Yorkshire as a Bevin boy. The school had 158 scholars and 106 infants when it included reading, writing, arithmetic, scripture, geography, singing, needlework and history." There's a small article with a colour photograph of a steam locomotive in the centre of Alsford. And it's steam giants go off the rails. But it's not as bad as you think. Residents were treated to a heritage spectacle as locomotives of the Midhants Railway were transported through Alsford. The Watercress Line's engines were being transported on the back of low-loader lorries in time for a gala at Somerset. Sue Clements, office manager at the Alsford station, said, "They go to the West Somerset Railway. They'll be running several engines when they're there. They're allowed to run on heritage lines, and it's cheaper for them to get there this way. Not all have a mainline connection, which is why they're being transported by lorry." And the last Belgarum item, this man puts himself about a bit. And there's a picture of Steve Brine. We see him here, we see him there. Frankly, we see him everywhere. Whatever your political persuasion, there's no doubting that Winchester MP Steve Brine works like a Trojan for his constituents. If there's something afoot, he's usually there in the thick of it, with a story breaking on his website soon afterwards. From all the public photographs that appear, we know his tie collection almost as well as his wife does. A brief perusal of Hansard reveals that Brine pursues voters' interests during Commons debates with the tenacity of a youthful Jack Russell. Last week, the Honourable Member erupted into Diva Society AGM, looking windswept, having either hot-footed it, or perhaps flown, straight from Westminster. After the meeting, he was off again, bound for a constituency dinner, looking a little frazzled but unbowed. Brine pops up so regularly, Belgarum wonders if there are actually two of him. We're keen to know. Not only would this mean that Winchester was getting extraordinarily good value in terms of political representation, it would be one hell of a news story. Now, we move on with this week's announcements, and we start with What's On. And there's a couple of concerts. And the Winchester Cathedral on Tuesday the 1st of April, a lunchtime concert. It's after midday, so it's okay on the 1st of April. And it's at 1 p.m. and it's by Alton College, and that's free with a retiring collection. And on Saturday the 5th of April, at St John the Baptist Church, West Street, Alsford, Purcell's Dido and Aeneas and Gilbert and Sullivan Trial by Jury. Tickets are obtainable only from Six West newsagents in West Street, Alsford. At the theatre, the Chesil Theatre has The Misanthrope by Molière with a 20th century setting, and that runs until April the 5th. For more information, telephone 07527 471 539 or visit chesiltheatre.org.uk. The Mayflower Southampton has the Buddy Holly story running until Saturday the 5th of April at 7:30, and there's matinees Thursday and Saturday. For more information from the Mayflower, telephone 02380 711 811. And at Salisbury Playhouse, Worst Wedding Ever is on, and that runs until April the 19th at 7:30. With matinees on Tuesday and Saturday. For more information from the Salisbury Playhouse, 01722 320 333. Now, lighting up time ends on Friday the 28th of March at 05:50 and begins at 6:31 p.m. On Wednesday the 2nd of April, it ends at 6:39 a.m. and begins at 7:39 p.m. And the eagle listeners amongst you will have noticed that the clocks go forward between now and then. So don't forget, 2 a.m. this Sunday, clocks go forward 1 hour. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370, and there's a laminated card in your wallet with that information on should you need it. And now we're going to continue with further items of general news.
And this one is headed, Hughes Abbey Mill Eatery is set to be something special. The £1 million revamp of one of Winchester's most anticipated restaurants is taking shape. Builders, architects and structural engineers have been working furiously, converting the historic Abbey Mill for Hugh Fernley Whiting Store's River Cottage, which is due to open in June. The eatery will be partly open plan on the ground floor, with an open kitchen, a separate bar area on the second floor, with another dining area and toilets to the back, and an area for private dining and staff area on the top floor. It will also have an outdoor seating area facing the park near the sluice, which has been turned into a bridge. Kevin Warren, head of estates at Winchester City Council, said, "By the end of April, we will have finished ready for River Cottage to come in. You'll be able to see through the whole building. All the windows have been restored back to their historic state. It's been quite a job, but the builders are working right on programme. It was in a really bad state when we first came in, right at the end of its tether. Part of it was used for offices, partitioned into different sections, but you couldn't see any of the building. But now we've returned to the state it was when it was a mill. The rebuild is expected to cost somewhere in the region of £1 million. The new restaurant will also feature some high-tech gadgetry. Part of the building will be used to house a specialist plant which uses ultraviolet and infrared to combat excessive light emissions as well as smells from the kitchen. Specialist contractors were also brought in to deal with problems caused by the floods, which caused a leak in part of the building when the river reached its peak. The firm, Oxford Hydrotechnics, used a dye to locate the leak and injected a product called epoxy into the cracks, which turned into foam when it made contact with the water sealing it. We think there was a mill here going back to Roman times, or so it's mentioned in various old documents, Mr. Warren added. A lot of the mill is very old. Part of it, we believe, dates back to around 1700, so we had quite a lot of work to do. It was very close to actually being unusable. If it had been left for another 18 months, I think it would have had it. Working on something like this, you really get the enjoyment of seeing something unfold before you. It's great when you see the finished product, and you can say to yourself, I did that.
Yes, this is quite a moving story in which Ali Kefford speaks to the proud mum of Matt Simmons, who died from a rare genetic disorder 3 years ago. It was the proudest of days, as Matt Simmons was formally called to the bar at London's Lincoln's Inn in October 2005 after completing years of legal training. The sun shone and his parents Zandra and David beamed. As always, the trio made the most of the occasion, celebrating an achievement that was all the more considerable, given that Matt suffered from the rare genetic disorder von Hippel-Lindau syndrome. The disease prompted tumours to grow in his brain and neck and went on to claim his life at the age of 39, as reported last week. A recent inquest heard how a reckless disregard of patient safety resulted in his death because agency nurses did not ensure that his ventilator was turned on. Now, with the official proceedings finally over, Zandra wants to remember Matt before he was bedbound and mark the life of her charismatic, determined and caring son, who made sure he relished everything positive in his life. Matt attended Toynbee School, where he made a cluster of lifelong friends, sang in the choir and played drums for the swing band. While studying for his A-levels at Barton Peveril College, he joined a band of ex-servicemen and toured the South's military bases, entertaining the troops while, according to Zandra, occasionally having sausage rolls thrown at him. By this time, Matt already appreciated the need to wring most out of every day. Aged 14, he was diagnosed with von Hippel-Lindau syndrome. His father David suffered from it too, and in a devastating twist of fate, they both developed brain tumours simultaneously in 1997. All this could have resulted in a dismal household. But while the seriousness of their situation was acknowledged, it was actually filled with love, companionship, laughter and merry family bickering. Sandra's eyes shimmer with pride as she recalls how her musical Matt composed a piece for piano, strings and wind instruments to mark his parents' 40th wedding anniversary in 2001 and then helped plan a surprise party at their home. He would have a go at everything, including, as it turned out, standing for Tory councillor in 2006 in a strongly Liberal Democrat ward. How apt, then, given Matt's sharp intellect and erudition, that a law degree from Southampton University should lead to the Cardiff Bar vocational course. He blamed his desire to become a barrister on a curious mind, or being just basically nosy. Too unwell after another tumour in 2006 to embark on a pupillage, Matt instead launched a mediation company in Southampton. In between his legal work, he raised money for Naomi House because he felt those children had less time than he had, fell in and out of love, and travelled extensively to the likes of America and Italy. His father, David, a traffic policeman, died in 2007, aged 66. "I don't think he ever got over that," says Zandra. "He said his father was the only person who understood his condition." It turned out they had just 2 years' respite before Matt's final illness began to develop. "Love each day for what you give..." Sorry, I'll read that again. "Love each day for what you give it, and for what it can give you," was his philosophy, and he abided by it right to the end. It's now nearly 3 years since Matt died, and his cluster of old Toynbee school friends and former girlfriends are all still in close contact with Zandra, dropping in for coffee, mowing her lawn, and sending her pictures of their children. The group is so close-knit that Zandra has photos of them all on display. "For that, I'm really grateful. That is his legacy," she says, with a dignity that is her hallmark. "Matt has ensured that I always have people around me."
And Westminster Diary has Steve Brine himself writing as the MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford. "From where I was sitting, which was right behind the Chancellor, last week's budget looked like a good one. You could be forgiven for thinking I, as a coalition MP, would say that, but I've criticised this government before and I will undoubtedly do so again. In the weeks leading up to Budget Day, this was my fifth, I looked for a handful of measures which, through talking to constituents, I think we'd like to see, and then I watched George Osborne like a hawk to spot the announcements likely to be of the greatest benefit to my constituency. Strike one was the announced Help for Savers, which will be met with relief by many. Countless retired people have said to me in recent years how low interest rates are hurting them, and given I never believed it should be a choice between savers or low mortgage rates for the families I also represent, the Chancellor had to do something creative. So while the abolition of the 10p rate on savings income was welcome, the new expanded and combined ISA, together with the new pensioner bond, will be of huge interest to thousands of people over 65 locally. Strike two was the rise in the personal allowance to £10,500, something I have argued passionately for within government since being elected. I want people to keep more of their own money, and that is a timeless value no one owns. Since 2010, this policy means lower taxes for just over 40,000 in my constituency, with around 400 people taken out of income tax altogether as a result of this budget. In media interviews afterwards, described budget 2014 as workmanlike, because I think the Chancellor deliberately and wisely stayed away from gimmicks and short-term announcements and focused on delivering a budget that is part of our long-term economic plan. Other key spots for me were the extension of the Help to Buy scheme, which will now run until 2020, and the expansion of the apprenticeships grant to help employers take on young job seekers. The range of support being made available to help local firms export to foreign markets was also welcome at centre stage in this year's budget. And a new grant scheme will provide £20 million towards grants for repairs to cathedrals in this centenary year of the ending of the Great War, which is of course an opportunity for Winchester. Finally, tucked in Budget Week was a welcome judgment at the High Court about the future of the Eagle Star site at Micheldever Station. As I said to the Diva Society AGM, the judge could not have been clearer. This land is not up for development. I hope everybody was listening.
This one's headed, "We are at breaking point over clubbers. Fed-up residents living near a city centre bar say their lives are being made a misery by late-night antisocial behaviour from revellers on their way home. 3 months after it reopened, the Vodka Bar and Nightclub in Upper Brook Street, Winchester, has been accused by homeowners of driving them to breaking point. Although there have been no arrests in connection with the club, Winchester City Council has received two complaints, one in January and one this month, both in relation to noise, antisocial behaviour, the licensing arrangements, and asking for more CCTV cameras along the residential section of the street. The chairman of the Parchment Brooks Residents Association, Michael Coker Davis, said, "Against local opposition, the vodka bar was opened, and ever since the council has wrung its hands regarding the increasing problems emanating as a result of their decision. People may say that this is a city and we should expect noise, but there's that, and then there's living with a nightclub 50 yards away from the homes of elderly people and families with young children. It's lunacy. The club, whose main club nights are on Tuesdays, Thursdays, Fridays and Saturdays, offers shots of alcohol from as little as £1.50 on a Friday evening, tempting revellers with the slogan, 'Party at the weekend on a student budget.' Last Friday, a sandbag was thrown on top of a resident's car, although there was no evidence it was a reveller from the club. Another resident, who wished to remain anonymous, said, 'It's a vomitorium. People just go down there and get slaughtered, and then come down here throwing bottles and being sick everywhere. It was bliss when that place was closed.' The club opens until 2 a.m. from Monday to Wednesday and 3 a.m. from Thursday to Saturday. Calvin Collymore, co-owner, said, 'Just prior to opening in December, we held a meeting with police, the council and residents so that they could raise any issues they had. Only three people turned up. The place is soundproofed. We can't turn the bass up any louder because it has a limiter, and we've done everything we can to make sure the noise doesn't disturb people. The council are happy with it. We always make sure at the end of the night that we go and bleach the alleyway outside, and the bouncers don't go home until everybody else has gone. We've given residents our phone numbers so that if there are any problems, they can call us and we can sort it out there and then.' Hampshire Constabulary said there had been no reported issues with the club. Martin O'Neill, a spokesman for Winchester City Council, said its policy was to liaise with complainants and investigate any issues as necessary.
Cash boost for community projects. Parishes across Winchester could be about to see a major cash boost from developers for infrastructure and transport. Winchester City Councillors met last week to discuss the Community Infrastructure Levy, that's CIL, which could earn parishes 15% of the tax for a development in their area. The new charge that the authority can apply to developers will be used to fund infrastructure, including schools and community, sport and recreation facilities and transport schemes. The tax will be divvied up between parishes, 15%, the Winchester Town Account, 15%, and Hampshire County Council, 25%. 5% will be used to cover administrative costs, and the rest will go to Winchester City Council. Parishes with approved neighbourhood plans will be able to qualify for 25%, whereas those without such plans will only be able to receive 15%. The scheme does not cover provision of additional capacity at some existing schools, whereby funding can be allocated via alternative means. These include Bishop's Waltham Infants and Junior Schools, St John the Baptist Primary School, Sunhill Infants and Junior Schools, Coldon Common Primary School and Swanmore College of Technology. Councillor Richard Izard said, "It's really good news for Coldon Common that it has been recognised that there is a problem with the capacity of the school by excluding it from the CIL, and that the contributions will be taken direct from developers. However, the bad news for Coldon Common is that by refusing 25% to the parish, it means that £95,000 will not come to the village for infrastructure by way of CIL. Councillor Kelsey Lerney said, "This is one of the ways our parishes can fund infrastructure rather than increase council tax."
And looking back this week is about Brusher Mills, the snake catcher who became a forest legend. Despite his death 109 years ago, the story of snake catcher Brusher Mills lives on, with the life of the legendary New Forest figure still acknowledged locally to this day. His unusual occupation and eccentric lifestyle ensured him a permanent place in Hampshire history and forest folklore. At the turn of the last century, he could often be seen in Brockenhurst or Lyndhurst High Street with his tin of writhing snakes and the main tool of his trade, a long forked stick. He used the stick's two short prongs to pin stakes before putting them into a sailcloth bag. Brusher is said to have caught up to 6,000 snakes in his lifetime, many of which he sold to London Zoo as fodder for their larger cousins in the reptile house. Other specimens went to collectors, laboratories, or into Brusher's pot to be turned into his famous rheumatism oil. He kept poisonous adders in a separate tin and sent their venom to a Lymington chemist. Henry Mills was born in 1838 into an old New Forest family, but the origin of his Brusher nickname is a matter for debate. Some say he used to brush dead grass off the cricket pitch at Bolton's Bench near Lyndhurst as a young man. Others say Brusher is an old name for people with an unkempt beard, which he certainly had. He was described as a short, stocky man, a little bent in old age, with eyes gleaming beneath bushy brows. His face was the colour of mahogany, and about his eyes were deep wrinkles, says one 1943 description of him. His clothes were nondescript. He wore several waistcoats, and sometimes a coat of rat-catcher type and a battered old hat. The outfit offered a curious suggestion of unconscious camouflage. Such a figure, given the forest craft which he undoubtedly possessed, would move through the woodland silently and without revealing his presence. Brusher's home for almost a third of his life was a ramshackle hut of his own making, sparsely furnished and deep in the forest near Queen's Bower. He is said to have gone there first because of a family row. He lived their hermit life for 20 years and 9 months, 3 months short of the period which enabled a forest squatter to call the land his own. Then the authorities forced him to leave, and he went to live with his sister. But the wrench almost destroyed him, and he died soon after, aged 67. In an interview in 1961, Mrs. Elizabeth Coker recalled knowing Brusher in the early years of the century. She described him as a benign old man who often sat under the shade of the church wall at Lyndhurst with his tin of snakes. Sometimes he would show us the snakes, but if we lingered too long after school, he would let a few go to frighten us off home, said Mrs. Coker. Brusher is buried in Brockenhurst churchyard, where a memorial stone summarises his remarkable life. And the article is accompanied by a delightful photograph of the man with his several waistcoats and a great huge bushy beard clutching a handful of snakes coming out of the bag.
Row after player barred from contest. A Winchester teenager has been barred from a sports contest because he doesn't go to the right school. Ben Corston from Littleton attends the Westgate School and is an avid rackets player. But the 14-year-old will have to watch his teammates from the stands as the country's leading independent schools voted to bar him from this week's doubles tournament, 3 months after he became the first state school pupil to win the National Public Schools contest. Now, the chief executive of the Tennis and Rackets Association, Chris Davis, who knows Ben, has slammed the decision. This is a step backwards against the 10 steps we have taken forward in the last year, he said. I still do not really fully understand the decision, and I'm trying to get to the bottom of it. It doesn't really make a huge amount of sense. We are working very hard to resolve this so that we're not having the same conversation next March, because that would be extremely poor, he said. Rackets, the forerunner to squash, is played at many of the country's most exclusive schools, and Ben, whose dad Tim is a professional, plays with Winchester College. Dr. Ralph Townsend, headmaster at the college, felt the decision was so unfair, he wrote a letter to the Racquets Professional Association. He said, "To allow them to play in the doubles would seem to fit in perfectly with the sort of thing we all want, namely, a generosity in the sharing of our many resources. With all the good work being done by independent schools to share time, resources and talent with the maintained sector, surely now is the time to loosen unnecessary restrictions." The RPA had not responded to requests for comment at the time of going to press.
Council's disappointed with flood repair grants. "It's just a drop in the ocean." That was a council boss's reaction after the government revealed how much money it is handing out to fix roads and other infrastructure devastated by the winter floods. Hampshire County Council is to receive £11 million out of a total of £183.5 million, while Southampton City Council will get just £221,057. City Council leader Simon Lett said, "While we are grateful for any extra government cash, the amount on offer is tiny compared to the massive cuts we have suffered in the course of this Parliament, cuts which amount to £148 per person over the 5 years. This money will allow us to resurface about 0.3% of our road network and represents a drop in the ocean in terms of the money we need to bring the roads in the city up to a decent standard." County Council leader Roy Perry, meanwhile, added that a figure closer to £50 million would be needed. He said, "It's a very complicated picture, but our current estimates have the damage to our infrastructure costing around £36 million to repair. We're still waiting for the water to recede in some places so we can send divers down to inspect our bridges. I'd not be surprised if our estimates go above £50 million. Councillor Perry added, "We are grateful for this significant contribution to what we believe could be a liability of at least £35 million, so getting a third of that initially is a really helpful first step. The County Council has more than 5,000 miles of roads to maintain, and Councillor Perry said fixing them as quickly as possible was a priority. For residents in flood-hit areas, the priority is on preventing such a scenario happening again. Chris Egg, a part-time driver who was forced to leave his home in Romsey when it was flooded in February, said, "We need a permanent solution, like a sluice gate or some diversion method to stop them flooding again. It was only sandbags and manpower that stopped it last time." Chris and wife Caroline are currently living in rented accommodation while dealing with insurers over their house. He added, "The road looks back to normal now, but there is a massive clean-up going on because of all the sewage that rushed up. It's not as pleasant as things may look on the surface." On top of the money being shared out to councils, Chancellor George Osborne announced in the budget that another £200 million will be provided for pothole repairs in 2014-15. And this is accompanied by a lovely picture of a resident being carried to safety from her flooded home in Hampshire. It's a white-haired woman with bare feet being carried by a very strong-looking man through knee-high water.
And this one is Last Call for the Winter Thrushes. The British Trust for Ornithology, BTO, is calling for members of the public to look out and listen out for thrushes, in particularly those that will be leaving our shores for northern and eastern Europe over the next few weeks, birds such as the redwing and fieldfare. This winter, members of the public have been monitoring the thrushes for the BTO, and the response has been fantastic. More than 640,000 birds have been recorded since mid-September from almost 3,000 locations throughout the UK. However, monitoring the arrival of the birds is far easier than keeping check on their departure. The arrival of fieldfares at the beginning of the winter is eagerly awaited by bird watchers and is well recorded. But when numbers begin to dwindle during the last days of winter, the departure of birds is easily overlooked. John Marchant, Winter Thrushes survey organiser at the BTO, said, "The survey comes to an end in mid-April and the next few weeks are critical for logging the departure of our winter visiting thrushes. We hope to see just when they leave different regions of the country and where their exit points are. Please register a winter walk for the survey and tell us what's happening in your area. This has been the second and final winter of the survey. Thrushes wintering in some areas have benefited from a better crop of berries than in the first winter and from milder temperatures everywhere. Flooding has restricted their use of low-lying farmland, but provided easy access to earthworms and other foods in waterlogged fields. And right now, these birds are on the move. And there is a photograph of both the neat little red wing and the handsome, much larger field fare.
This one is headed, Stars Come Out to Support Stricken Alex. £15,000 raised for Dad struck down with rare illness. Some of Hampshire's best known faces turned out to support a brave young dad struck down by a devastating illness. Celebrity chef James Martin and former TV sports presenter Dickie Davis were among those who joined top hairdresser Guy Cremer in Winchester to raise more than £15,000 for Alex Lewis and his family. Guy held a three-hour blow-dry boot camp at his salon in Parchment Street, the first fundraiser for the Al Lewis Trust. Mr. Lewis has had both legs and an arm amputated and lost parts of his face after what started as a common cold left him fighting for his life. The 34-year-old from Stockbridge, who has a 3-year-old son, Sam, was diagnosed with blood infection group A, streptococcus, a normally harmless bacteria, which in Mr. Lewis's case forced his organs to shut down. Surgeons have had to amputate both legs above his knees, his left arm above his elbow, and reconstruct his remaining arm to save his life. His partner, Lucy Townsend, and mum, Doreen Jarvis, were at the Winchester Salon on Saturday night for the event with many of Lewis's friends. People learned professional blow-drying skills and got a goodie bag from Mr. Cremer in return for a donation. There was also a pop-up florist, an auction, and non-alcoholic cocktails from the Hotel du Vin. Although Southampton FC star Jay Rodriguez was unable to attend due to Saints match at Tottenham last Sunday, he donated signed football boots worn when he played for England to be auctioned. Mr. Cremer said, "We're very close to Alex. My partner is godfather to Alex's son, and we want to try to help as much as we can." Mrs. Jarvis said that Mr. Lewis felt people were doing lovely things for him and wanted to be able to thank them. "He truly appreciates it all very much. It was unbelievable," she said. Upcoming events include a golf day hosted by Dickie Davis and a fishing day. The Al Lewis Trust will help fund Mr. Lewis's rehabilitation costs and support the intensive care unit at Salisbury District Hospital, where he's being treated. And along with this article, we have a very nice coloured photograph showing the Mayor of Winchester, Lucy Townsend, the partner of Alex Lewis, and the TV chef, James Martin, and the celebrity hairdresser, Guy Cremer, and also Dickie Davis, former TV presenter.
And here's another heartwarming fundraising story. A Kingsworthy family who fundraises to get their son a new wheelchair have said thank you to their community. 6-year-old Finn Kitchen was born with the rare condition called Joubert syndrome and needed a new lightweight wheelchair to help him get around more easily. His illness means he has difficulty walking, and his mum, Katie, 31, and dad, Dan, 26, set up the campaign, which saw friends, colleagues and community groups raise the £2,500 needed for the wheelchair. Mrs. Kitchen said, "We didn't expect to raise as much as we did as quickly as we did, and we feel very humbled for people to have given us as much as they have. It's just so much easier for him to get around and have a bit more independence, which is what any six-year-old needs. I think he likes all this attention and having a nice new orange wheelchair. She added, his favourite moment during the fundraising was when his friends took part in a superhero-sponsored walk. That really meant a lot to him. We're amazingly lucky to live in such a great community. And this is accompanied with a delightful picture of quite a cheerful-looking six-year-old sitting in his bright orange wheelchair, wearing a blue sweatshirt with Batman on the front, and next to him is his best friend, Sophie Garlic, and then surrounded by well-wishers, all clapping, and his mother and father holding up a big cheque from the round table marked Even Superheroes Wobble for £500.
And now we have Fair Trade helping to build a better future. Chandler's Ford was awash with fashion lovers when St Martin's Church hosted a Fair Trade catwalk. 16 models paraded clothes and accessories from Tradecraft, Braintree, Nomads and Kazuri, sporting a range of glamorous dresses, handcrafted necklaces, wardrobe staple tees and shirts. The event also featured a guest appearance from Dorothy Agard, a banana farmer from St Lucia in the West Indies, who told of benefits brought by being a fair trade farmer. She said, I was shocked to see bananas on sale in the UK for 68 pence a kilo. Now I understand why banana farmers in St Lucia are struggling even to survive. Every year we ensure the children of the poorest families can get to secondary school. It gives them a real chance in the future. I say to people in Hampshire, please buy fair trade bananas or we will not survive. The Fair Trade Foundation used the event to launch a campaign which wants Business Secretary Vince Cable to probe the impact of unsustainable supermarket pricing to protect the farmers who grow our favourite fruit. Organiser Tricia Urquhart said, the Fair Trade mark guarantees a minimum price for producers and an extra premium which must be spent for the benefit of the wider community, not just farmers. Sometimes their products are slightly more expensive, but when you see the difference this makes in the lives of poor communities, you understand what great value they are. And it's accompanied by a photograph of some of the organisers with Dorothy Agard, the banana grower from St Lucia, holding up an enormous inflatable banana with a broad smile on its face.
Doubts over lowering speed limits. Questions have been raised over whether there is enough public support to reduce speed limits on streets in the city centre. Winchester Town Forum heard that although there was general backing for more 20-mile-per-hour zones, just 22 letters had been received in support and 14 against. Steve Tilbury, the City Council's corporate director, said the city centre limits could be in place by August. Councillor Ian Tate said, if you're seen to be opposing speed limits, you're seen to be supporting accidents. But the number of people travelling too fast in Winchester is very much a minority. I think bringing in 20-mile-per-hour speed limits with very little enforcement means the people who want to speed will continue to speed, so I'm not sure of the value of this measure. I do not think it will stop the inveterate speeder. The limits have already been agreed for Winnall and Highcliffe, where the costs could total £5,800 and £7,000 respectively. There was also criticism that City Council officers had failed to present evidence that reduced speeds will mean fewer accidents. But Councillor Fiona Mather added, I've had more emails from people who are disappointed that they're not going to be included in the zone than anything else. I've had no one complaining that they are going to be in the zone.
New date for Rotary Swimathon. A charity event which fell victim to the recent floods is back on the calendar. Water's not usually a problem for swimmers, but the Winchester Rotary Swimathon, which had been due to be held at Winchester College on February the 22nd, was postponed when the pump room at the college's pool in Kingsgate Street became submerged. The rearranged fundraiser will now go ahead on Saturday, April the 12th. Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Ernie Jeffs, is supporting the event. He said, "The work that the Rotary does is very laudable, and their work is voluntary, so I always try to get behind them whenever possible. I might get the trunks out. We'll have to see." The event is the fifth to be held in Winchester, and the residents are encouraged to put a team together to swim in relay for 55 minutes. Proceeds will go to the Mayor's chosen charities, the Countess Mountbatten Hospice, Hounds for Heroes, and the Network Scouts. Entrants are also asked to donate £25 from any sponsorship money to the Rotary Trust Fund. Last year's event saw more than 100 swimmers turn out in 28 teams, raising more than £10,000 for charity. The team from Peter Simmons College will be looking to preserve its sterling record in the event, having swum the most lengths last year, an impressive 207.
And here we have shops recognised for their disabled access. Shops in Winchester have been presented with awards recognising their accessibility for disabled people. Winchester Area Access for All, WAFA, is a forum for highlighting issues involving access to businesses. It gave out 29 gold, silver and bronze certificates and badges to recognise those that give great service. Each shop was tested by a mystery shopper and then graded according to how accessible it was in categories such as entrance to shop, service and information. WAFA chairman Keith Hatter said, "We feel there is much good practice among Winchester's businesses. This deserves recognition so that not only the customers and potential customers are aware of it, but also so that those who practice it know that it is appreciated and are encouraged to continue and even, if possible, improve it. Shops that have met the criteria are entitled to display a certificate or symbol of excellence. There was one gold winner at the ceremony, which saw the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Ernie Jeffs and Mayoress Barbara Jeffs present the awards. Clarks secured the top spot, while Moss Bros, Barclays, Boots, Ernest Jones, Three Store, Halifax, Holland & Barrett, HSBC, Jack Wills, Jigsaw, Lloyds TSB, Phase 8, Santander, Shoon, Superdrug and Wittard all won silver. The bronze winners were Bellis, Caracoli, Debenhams, HMV, Hotter, LK Bennett, Montezuma, Nationwide, Starbucks, Thorntons and Vodafone. And all of these are pictured sitting with the mayor at the presentation ceremony.
Romsey Show says farewell to Annie after a dozen years. Romsey Show has said a long and fond farewell to Secretary Annie Carter after 12 years' service. After a standing ovation at the 2013 show, as she rode around the main ring aboard a cart pulled by a pair of heavy horses, there was a surprise leaving party at the town hall, where she was whisked off by firemen for a ride around town. And now the society has presented her with a decanter to mark her wonderful contribution to the show, and especially her promotion of the link between town and country. Annie said, "I'd always wanted to run a big agricultural show after managing pony club events, and Romsey certainly lived up to expectation. A successful show with more than 20,000 people leaving happy gives you a huge buzz. Following 12 shows and her 60th birthday, she has opted for retirement, but has accepted the post of President of the Hampshire Federation of Young Farmers Clubs and is also hoping to spend more time on a family farm on the Isle of Wight. I've had a brilliant time, especially at the Muddy Show in 2008 when others cancelled, but everyone pulled together to make it work. However, it's a lifestyle job and there are other things that I want to do. Taking over the reins from Annie is Penny Muxworthy, daughter of a Devon dairy farmer, who has a strong track record in administration and event management. Since 2009, she has been employed as events manager for the Wildfire Wildfowl and Wetlands Trust at Slimbridge. A change in her husband's career from architecture to train driver brought him to the Salisbury Depot and her to the Romsey Show. Said Penny, "I've spent many a night curled up in the straw of the cattle lines where I helped to show my dad's Holsteins, and the show secretary's job links that past life in agriculture with the skills I have acquired over the last 20 years.
Bangers are a smash hit with judges. Ever fancied a banana split sausage, or what about venison and chocolate? These were just some of the offerings to tickle the taste buds as butchers from across Hampshire went head-to-head in a competition in Winchester. The Great Hampshire Sausage and Pie Competition saw professional and guest judges spend 4 hours separating both the bizarre and traditional to find the top pies and top bangers. The event, organised by County Food Group Hampshire Fair, made a comeback last year after a 2-year absence and looks set to become a regular fixture in the Hampshire calendar. There were 196 entries from 29 butchers lining the tables at the Holiday Inn last Tuesday, competing in 13 categories. They included the traditional pork sausage, charcuterie, black pudding, hot and cold pies and ready meals. Although many had stuck with traditional recipes, some of the more colourful sausages included marmalade and red onion, duck and orange, sweet chilli and chocolate, pork and toffee apple, beef horseradish and garlic, and beef and ale hot pot. Judges scored each entry based on their appearance, texture, structure, taste, smell, and how easy they are to cut. Category winners received a chopping board-inspired plaque made from New Forest wood. Supreme champion this year was Southampton Butchers Upton of Bassett for its traditional pork sausage. Judges included James Golding, chef at the Pig Restaurant in the New Forest, and Mick Whitworth, editor of Fine Food Digest. And there are several pictures here showing lots of succulent-looking sausages.
And here we have work gets underway on new St Swithin's Junior. Work has begun to completely rebuild St Swithin's Junior School on the existing campus on Alsford Road in Winchester. The new school will replace the existing buildings and enable the junior school to increase its pupil numbers in response to an increased demand for places, whilst also allowing smaller class sizes. It will include specialist teaching rooms, a science laboratory, an art studio, a media IT room, and a new performing arts space and gym. Said head, Pim Grimes, "I'm delighted that after all of our planning and preparation, work has started on our new school. The design will make the most of our rural position in the South Downs National Park and allow the pupils to engage with this environment, whilst also providing an atmosphere conducive to academic study and facilities to support our drama, musical and sporting activities. The fact that the children have been involved in some of the plans for their new school adds to the excitement. The new school mains building will open in September 2015, and there is a picture of a group of Year 4 pupils all in their blue tartan skirts and bright green jackets as if they're about to start building, accompanied by members of staff and the head teacher, Pim Grimes, in pink wellies and a pink day-glow jacket and hard hat with a spade ready to dig."
Easter Adventures at Hinton Ampner. The National Trust is appealing for Eggsplorers. They are joining forces with Cadbury to bring chocolate-flavoured fun to historic locations, including Hinton Ampner near Alsford this Easter. The theme is discovery, with families invited to unleash their inner explorer on adventure trails throughout the county. Organisers say each trail is unique to its location, and the youngsters will be finding out about each place as they take part in the trails, which lead to a chocolatey treat. Each adventure helps support trust properties. At Hinton Ampner, it's a case of following the clues to find 9 giant eggs hidden within the spring gardens. There will also be egg and spoon racing and free face painting. The Easter Trail and Face Painting is taking place from April 18th to 21st, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Visitors pay the normal admission price, plus £3 per trail. The Egg and Spoon Race is on April 21st, from 2 to 3:30 p.m. Normal admission plus £1 per race. Call 01962-771-305 for further information. I'll repeat that. Call 01962-771-305 for further information.
Itchen Valley plans too commercial. Concerns have been raised that a Hampshire beauty spot is being commercialised. Eastleigh Borough Council has announced that it plans to spend thousands of pounds on improving visitor and catering facilities at Itchen Valley Country Park. It has also approved putting a solar farm on the land. Cabinet members and planners have given the go-ahead for a £1.2 million scheme involving 3,380 panels on land at the country park in West End. The scheme is part of the Council's plan to reduce the CO2 emissions by 50% by 2020 and to produce more renewable energy in the borough. A council report states that the project will take 12 years to pay for the initial start-up costs, and from then on, over the next 7 years, it will bring in £130,000, dropping to £50,000 in its 21st year when feed-in tariff payments stop. Funded by the council and central government, the solar farm off Allington Lane would generate 1,000 kilowatts of electricity a year, enough to power 260 homes. Opposition leader Councillor Godfrey Olsen voiced at a meeting of the full council his fears of Itchen Valley Country Park being commercialised. Councillor Keith Howes responded that commercial activities were positive in creating opportunities and investing in the community and attracting more people into the countryside and getting them fit.
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Linda Vincent and Margaret Boyden. And thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thank you, of course, to our readers, Shirley Parnell.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye. And do have an enjoyable week. When you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.